Now it's time for KENI's night final edition of news. The involved problem of United States-Alaska commercial air routes is expected to be discussed at a Civil Aeronautics Board hearing on October 25th. That hearing will be held either in Seattle or in Washington, D.C. The published reports in Seattle say the hearing will be one of the most extensive in Alaskan air route history. The hearing is expected to result in a new route for at least one of the major carriers serving the territory. All of the applicants have asked for co-terminals in both Alaska and the states. Applications are on file from Ween, Alaska Airlines, Alaska Airlines, Alaska Transportation Company, Pan American, Pacific Northern, Mount McKinley Airways, and Arnold Air Service. Pan American wants to run from Juneau to Anchorage. It now operates from Seattle to Juneau, then inside to Fairbanks. Pacific Northern, now the connecting link for Pan American, from Juneau to Anchorage, Bristol Bay, and Kodiak, once a Seattle-Juneau link of its own. From Spokane comes word that three flights a week will be started immediately from Spokane to help solve the food and supply shortage problems here in Alaska. The Spokane representative of Alaska Airlines said today that the supplementary flights will be set up to meet the problems created by the maritime strike. The new trips to Alaska will make connections with regular schedules from Chicago to Alaska. Arrivals at Spokane will be Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and Alaska flights will run on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays. On the political scene, Governor Thomas Dewey has outlined a program for curbing inflation. He charges that the Democratic administration has been deliberately discouraging production and trying to raise prices. The main point of Dewey's plan to fight inflation is a great upsurge of production. President Truman's major subject in a speech at El Paso, Texas, was public power. He said the present laws let the government build lines to get power from public dams to the users at the lowest possible rates. Then, Mr. Truman quoted Republican Representative George Dondero of Michigan as saying that the next Congress can and should change those laws. Dondero later said Mr. Truman had misinterpreted his article. The Democratic vice presidential candidate, Senator Alvin Barkley of Kentucky, has called Governor Thomas Dewey's stand on atomic energy development sinister and callous. In a speech at Worcester, Barkley said that a recent speech by Dewey contained hints that atomic secrets would be turned over to private industry rather than remaining in government hands. And the Republican vice presidential candidate, Governor Earl Warren of California, has appealed for a show of unity by Americans in the 1948 campaign. He says such a display would be an inspiration to the free countries behind the Iron Curtain. The Republican vice presidential candidate made his appeal in a speech at Buffalo, New York. He said he hoped the campaign could be kept on a high plane of Americanism. In New Jersey, Agriculture Secretary Charles Brannan said that a depression would follow weakening of the present strong government farm supports. He spoke extemporaneously in Bridgeton, New Jersey. He discarded a prepared anti-Dewey address when he learned that the meeting was a celebration of Cumberland County's 200th anniversary. Well, some 18,000 Air Force veterans had a good time tonight at New York's Madison Square Garden. It was the climax to their two-day reunion. Highlighting the evening was a presentation in which stage, screen, and radio entertainers repeated performances they gave overseas during the war. The evening also had its serious moments. There was a tremendous ovation as the crowd paid tribute to the 13 living men of the Air Force who hold the Congressional Medal of Honor. One of the heroes presented a plaque to the American Radio and Press. The award was in grateful recognition of the success of that profession in telling the story of the war and in memory of those who gave their lives in so doing. Overseas, the Russians have demanded full control of the commercial air transport from Berlin to the western zones of Germany. A Moscow broadcast quoted a dispatch from the Soviet news agency TASS saying that the August negotiations in the Kremlin between the four powers produced an agreement on the Berlin dispute hinging on the agreement by the military commanders in Berlin. The broadcast said the agreement called for the lifting of the Russian blockade on condition that the Soviet-sponsored currency is the only German mark used in the city. The TASS broadcast said that the United States, Britain, and France are responsible for the Berlin crisis. TASS said the Berlin problem resulted from violation of the Potsdam decisions by the three Western powers. According to the Russians, the violation came when the Western powers introduced a reformed currency into Western Berlin. This, the broadcast said, forced Russia to blockade Berlin and, we quote, to safeguard the interests of the German population and to protect the economic life of the Soviet zone. Czechoslovakia today is in the midst of a vast spy hunt. and Czech officials hint that the trail of plots to overthrow the Czech communist government has led to the United States Embassy. The Czechs name the American Army Counterintelligence Corps, stationed in Germany, as the principal villain in the alleged anti-communist plot. 8 persons described as counterintelligence agents have been arrested. An army spokesman in Frankfurt, Germany, has replied that the Czech charges against the counterintelligence corps were made out of whole cloth. One State Department employee, George Renchert of Detroit, escaped today from Russian police. 2 Russians arrested him while he was en route from an assignment in Holland to a post in Vienna. The Russians said his travel permit was out of date, and while the Russians escorted Renchert into Vienna, he sighted an American-driven international patrol car. He rammed his own car into it, then explained to the Americans that he was being held against his will. On the other side of the world, the Chinese government now admits that the communists have captured Sinan, the capital of the important Shantung province. The reversal is a serious one, which has shaken Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek's regime. The government high command has held an emergency conference to discuss where General Chen Yi's victorious communist army might strike next. And the premier of Java says the communists have strongholds all over his country. He said the people of Java have turned to the communists because of bad economic conditions. The premier expressed a belief that trouble could be expected in the near future. Here at home, the attorney general has reclassified a list of the organizations that he previously named as communist, fascist, and the like. Under the new grouping, 82 organizations are listed as communist. In addition, 15 organizations are classified as fascist, 22 as totalitarian, and 6 are called subversive. The reclassified list will be used in the loyalty checks of government workers. And that's the news till now. Listen again tomorrow night at 10:30 for KENI's night final edition of news.
By delayed broadcast, glimpses of people and places that make up our great territory of Alaska. Time once more for Tundra Topics, brought to you by the Bank of Fairbanks in a friendly spirit of neighborliness and goodwill. It's Friday, October 15th at 9:30 in the evening. Tony Marmachuk, over 80 years of age and living in a cabin 20 miles down the Richardson Highway, has been missing since August 28th, it was learned this week, at the U.S. Commissioner's office when Vili Yankovich, neighbor on Pile Driver Slough, reported that a search made by himself and assistants proved unsuccessful. Tony has been in the habit of dropping in at the cabin where Yankovich and his woodcutter partner, Eric Collin, reside to listen to their radio. When he failed to show up after some time, the two finally reported it to federal authorities. Commissioner Everett Smith authorized a search with Yankovich in charge. Yankovich reported that they had looked all around for a distance of 5 miles from both sides of his cabin and found no trace of the missing man. A report from Cordova is that the old Copper River Highway is 100% practical, at least according to the verdict of Paul Schnurr of Catala and Leslie Acord of Cordova, who walked 131 miles from Chitna to Cordova for the local Chamber of Commerce. They left October 2nd and returned October 8th. Schnurr said, "The roadbed was in far better condition than I had expected after 10 years. He mentioned that the road could be rebuilt in one working season and should be included in the 1948 appropriations. John Lefevre of the Cordova Chamber of Commerce said, "We are greatly encouraged and hope to drive from Cordova to Fairbanks by 1950. Old-timer Charles Matson of Live and Good leaves this week for Wardner, Idaho, to spend a few months with his sister. Alaska Airlines announces that the attempted flight this morning to 70 Mile and 40 Mile was forced back due to weather. The trip will be made tomorrow, however, and Mrs. Brown will be picked up at Jack Wade. Ween Alaska Airlines pilot Bob Bell and his wife Lillian left for the States yesterday afternoon on a 6 months leave of absence. The couple will visit in Nevada and continue over to Long Beach, California, where Bell will work toward his airline transport rating. After a 4-month vacation outside, Father F.M. Menager, Society of Jesus, one of the old missionaries of the Bering Sea coast, is back in the Northland. The priest who has worked among the Eskimos for 21 years has been appointed by the bishop, Most Reverend Francis Gleason, to take charge of the boarding school of St. Mary's at Akularak. Alaska Airlines announces the beginning of a weekly mail run to Circle starting next Monday. Next Monday, Alaska Day will be observed as a public holiday in Fairbanks in celebration of the 81st anniversary of the transfer of Alaska from Russia to the United States. As most stores, federal, territorial, and city offices will be closed, many persons are planning to take advantage of the double weekend to make the excursion to Mount McKinley Park, where the Alaska Railroad has prepared a celebration of both Alaska Day and the debut of the railroad's second streamliner, Aurora II. However, the Aurora II, the belle of the ball, will not be present due to the fact that it is now somewhere between Ketchikan and Seward aboard a series of barges which have been severely buffeted in the storm-tossed Alaskan waters. Although one of the barges broke loose, it is now in line again, said T.O. Payton, station agent for the Alaska Railroad. Passengers with Northern Consolidated Airlines today included Joel Nelson to Koyukuk, Vincent Durkee to Ruby, and Dateen Andre to Nulato. Ween Alaska Airlines today flew Alfred White and Paul Solomon to Fort Yukon, Jack Whaley to Point Barrow, and Mr. and Mrs. Bill Strandberg and Robert Chapman from Utopia Creek. All that glitters is not Chechako Hill. Back in the days of 98, many incipient missionaries found their start in the earth, but diggings have changed now. Employees of the Pepsi-Cola Company hit a pay streak in a drainage culvert leading from the bottom washing machine. Finders surmise that the 2 ounces of nuggets came from a case of empty bottles, one of which might have been the stashing away place for a wary modern prospector. So if you are short 2 ounces of gold, and it was in nuggets, call the Pepsi-Cola Company. You won't need to bring a parchment map. Folks at Joseph's Village will be interested to hear that pilot Bob Shalton will be up to Joseph's Village as soon as weather permits. The field there should be marked showing the number of inches of snow on the field, so the figure will be visible from the air. Folks at Joseph Village will be interested to hear that pilot Bob Shalton will be up to Joseph's Village as soon as weather permits. In order to provide our listeners with the latest news from all parts of Alaska and the Yukon Territory, the Bank of Fairbanks earnestly invites you to continue to send in your Tundra Topics contributions as you have done so faithfully in the past. Until tomorrow then at 9:30, good night.